Hi there, everybody. This is Tracy, and I am here with Raven from Raven's New Life, right? She's a YouTuber, and we are here to talk about the narcissists and their lies. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi there. So I have a couple questions. So how long have you been making YouTubes?
I think it's been about 2 years now.
Wow. And have you seen yourself evolving through that time?
I look back at some of my older videos when, especially when I was going through the divorce from the narcissist, and I look so unanimated. I'm just very, very tense and very timid. And the more I got through the divorce and started making more videos, it seems like I've kind of come out of my shell a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see a difference when I look back. I've only been doing it for a year, but my first ones, I was like meek and scared and not really confident and not really me. So it's interesting to see.
Yeah, I think I saw some earlier videos.
They were scary. So today we want to talk about divorcing a narcissist and the lies that they tell during the process, set up things to sneer us. So you have a unique story, and I would love for my viewers to hear about the beginning of learning about a narcissist, what happened with you guys.
It's kind of a long story. I can try to condense it a little bit to give you the Reader's Digest version. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really know that I was married to a narcissist. I just knew that there was something wrong with my marriage. And it had come down to, I think it was 5 years ago. On Mother's Day weekend, he threatened to have me committed to a psychiatric ward, simply because I was upset that he had went out of town on Mother's Day weekend. And that was the only weekend that I had to go out with the girls that week. It was the only weekend. And I just wanted to enjoy Mother's Day weekend. And when he got back and I told him I wasn't happy in the marriage, that maybe I wanted a divorce, he said, "Oh, you're going to divorce me? Oh, no, you're not. You know, I'm going to have you committed. I'll have you committed to a psych ward." And when, you know, that didn't work, he said, "I'll call the cops and tell them that you hit me. You'll go to jail." And I think he realized that I believed him at that point. And so I stayed in the marriage a couple more years until one night we had an argument. And it was just a stupid argument, because arguments you have with narcissists are stupid normally. They're over, you know, just dumb things. But this one got violent, and he tore up our bedroom, and I was on the mattress of the bed, and he yanked the mattress off the bed, and he was yanking it and just pulling it like, I mean, he's just heaving, you know, like an animal. He gets up on the mattress and he starts pounding it with his fists as hard as he can, and scared the life out of me. And he was screaming, "You don't understand me. You don't understand my pain. You never listen to me unless I'm screaming at the top of my lungs." You know, just like that. And I was so scared, I said, you know, very quietly, "I'm going to go get the children and take them to my mother's house." And he snapped at that point. I mean, it was almost like flipping a switch. And he gets up like, "Oh, you're going to leave me? Then I'm going to kill myself." And so he goes into our closet. He gets out a sawed-off shotgun, and he put it in his mouth. And I heard him load it, because he had made the ch-ch sound. And I had to make a choice whether to go and face him or go and grab my kids and take them to my mom's house and, you know, face the possibility of him coming at me with the gun at that point. So I went and I talked him out of suicide. I found out later that the gun would never have gone off because it was on safety. But, you know, here's this vision of my husband sitting there, you know, with a gun in his mouth and his finger on the trigger. And so I talked him out of suicide, and then he went to bed. He was like, "Okay, well, I'm going to go to sleep now." And he went to his office and laid down on the couch in his office and went to sleep. And I'm laying there like scared to death, like, what am I going to do? You know, it's like my husband, you know, tried to kill himself. And I tried to wake him up. And, you know, I said, you need to go to the emergency room because you tried to kill yourself. And he's like, I'm not going in the middle of the night. I'm getting a good night's sleep. So I went downstairs and I came back a couple hours later because I was still scared. And I yanked the pillow out from under his head, which later he would use to say that that was abuse, that I had abused him by yanking the pillow out from under his head. And I told him, if you don't go to the ER, I'm going to call the cops or I'm going to call the EMTs to come get you. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, he did go to the emergency room, but he packed a bag. And I'm like, who packs an overnight bag to go to the emergency room? Because when you go, it's an emergency. You don't pack a bag.
You don't plan.
Yeah. You know? But yeah, it was planned. But when he got to the emergency room, they said, yes, you are suicidal. And they sent him to a mental hospital for 4 days. And while he was in the mental hospital, I didn't realize that he was lawyering up. He was getting a lawyer, and he was talking to anyone and everyone who would listen to him, creating this story about our lives, that he was married to this abusive, manipulative woman who had driven him to suicide, and he's such a victim, poor little him. And I had no idea any of this was going on because I was at home taking care of children, you know, and working, mm-hmm. you know, while he's in the mental hospital. The big lie that happened was he was on the phone with me every night telling me, I'm going to get help. Everything's going to be all right. I'm going to come home and be the right kind of husband and father to you and the kids. And then instead, he left the mental hospital, went to his parents' house for 2 days and got a lawyer mm-hmm. and didn't tell me that we were getting a divorce. He told our kids. And then our kids told me. Oh. And so that's why I was mad when I called him up, you know, like, what do you mean we're getting a divorce? And he was like, calm down, calm down. You're being irrational. You're being irrational. And he ended up hanging up on me and he texted my mother and said, call Raven. She's hysterical. So I think he recorded that conversation because he would use that conversation later to say that I was verbally abusive to him, which, you know, I may have been verbally abusive at that point because I was seriously upset because I just learned through my 9-year-old that I'm getting a divorce. But
and the whole thing was
kind of in a nutshell.
You were blindsided. You hadn't.
Yeah.
You were pissed off at him, but like.
I had no idea that any of this was going on. And the fact that I think he was planning to get out of the marriage long before any of this happened, because later I learned he had a secret bank account and he had a secret credit card that he owed thousands of dollars on this credit card, and he had a bank account that he was using. And my lawyer thought that he was probably using this bank account on some other woman that he had met at work, which, you know, he's now with that woman. But apparently he had been saying things to other people, like my sister-in-law, that we were having problems in the marriage. And I had no idea that we were having problems, mm-hmm. you know, other than our regular problems. But mm-hmm. and so I was, I guess, the last to know.
Wow. Well, I was the last to know, too. When my husband wanted a divorce, I had no idea. I was completely blindsided. And I was so blindsided that my husband called me on the telephone. He had just been in New York and he called me on the phone and said, I don't think I want to be married anymore. And it was just so surreal that I just went into the garage to hide from my son and cry. And the whole process was just filled with lies, and everything that he and his family, because I wasn't divorcing a man, I was divorcing a family. So they ganged up on me. And the lies that they told throughout our 7 trials of divorce, was just one thing after another. And I couldn't understand where this was coming from because none of it was true. And I couldn't understand that he wasn't getting in trouble for the things that he was doing, like get all your papers together. He didn't do them. He never
there's never reckoning. They get away with so many things.
Right.
And you know, he never had to pay for a lawyer. His parents paid for a lawyer. They bought him a condo to live in, which he just now sold and made $40,000 on it.
Wow.
You know, he never, when we were married, he got us into tax debt with the IRS. And I was scared to death that, you know, the people in black helicopters and the guys with, you know, machine guns were going to come busting down our door, because he didn't just not pay taxes. He was a tax protester, where, you know, he decided that there was not a constitutional amendment. There was nothing in the Constitution that said that you had to pay income taxes. So he's writing letters to the government constantly saying how the income tax is illegal and not paying income taxes. And we're getting letters from the IRS, but I didn't know we were getting letters for a while, because he would run out to the mailbox and get the letters and keep them. You know, it was only when I found out we had a tax court date, we were going to get hauled into tax court, and they had put a lien on our house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I bailed him out of that situation, because that's when I went and got a stay-at-home job being a transcriptionist. And I paid back every penny of that $20,000 that we owed to the IRS. And, you know, I never made him accountable. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they're never accountable for their lies or anything they do. And people believe them. You know, that they can tell such really good stories where people will believe anything.
Oh, yeah. What I find is that when they're telling the story that is a lie, they very often like throw in a little kibble of truth, and they'll throw in something so that people, yeah, go, oh, yes, she's a very good storyteller. She must be lying. It's, you know, they use like a little bit.
Like he used military. Like he used my military training against me, because people were almost willing to believe that I was abusive because I've had combat training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm a sergeant in the United States Army. They're like, oh, yeah, she could be abusive. You know, even though he's 6'2" and 250 pounds, you know, this little 120-pound, 5'2" girl could, oh, yeah, she could take him. You know, she's had combat training.
Wow.
You know, it's things like that, or, you know, him using pulling the pillow out from under his head, that, oh, she pulled the pillow out from under my head and then proceeded to hit me with the pillow. I'm like, no, I pulled the pillow out from under your head to wake you up, but I was never beating him. But yeah, they put those little bits of truth into it,
right,
you know, mixed in with the lies.
Yeah. They, narcissists are just like, they think that they are entitled to lie, and it's okay that they make up stories. And I see it so clearly when I talk to survivors, because every single one of them's got a story that it's almost like in the beginning, they love bomb us and they tell us stories of how great they are, and we believe it. And then towards the end, they're just sitting there making this stuff up, and everybody else is believing them. I don't get it.
Well, it's like, you know, that they find we're empathetic people, and we're willing to give people a second, third, fourth chance. And, you know, we're very forgiving people. And with him, he made me feel sorry for him, because he had such a horrible childhood. He was abused. It was a horrible childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that served a couple purposes. It made me, you know, feel sorry for him, like, oh, I'm going to make it better. You know, love conquers all. But he's also triangulating me against his parents, because then once I meet his parents, I already have, you know, I'm like a flying monkey at this, mm-hmm, point, because I'm like, oh, these horrible people, you know, I already hate them, even though I haven't met them yet. Mm-hmm. And they hate me because he's triangulated them against me, you know, telling like, I'm dating this girl, but, you know, she's kind of pushy, and she's, you know, she's very manipulative, and I don't know, she's kind of bossy. I mean, yeah, things that are not me, but so then they have a perception of me, and even in the love bombing stage, there's lies and triangulation, manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can tell you some lies. I mean, I think you know the story of me being arrested by 3X, my boyfriend. And as I sat there in his driveway, coming to forgive him for sleeping with someone else, not knowing there was another new person in his driveway, he sat there, you know, straight face and told the police officer that he was scared. I had done nothing.
Oh yeah, because you're a stalker.
I was crying. And then the girl who was in the car ended up, I don't know if you've seen those videos, but she was his next supply and we've become really close. And
He
said he walked inside and his son was like, "Dad, what happened?" And he said, "Tracy tried to kill me." And she was like, "No, she didn't." And so he took that lie and he took it to the police and he said he was scared. And he said that it was the tone of my voice that frightened him. I was crying. I was like, where's the tone of my voice saying, "I just learned about, I have abandonment issues and, you know, I just want to forgive you and let's get on with life." And he turned it all around and this lie became something that landed me in a jail cell with no conscience. I kept thinking there that he must feel bad because this has to be a mistake. There's no way. No, he did not feel bad. In fact, just kept on, you know, hammering those screws into the coffin because he had to protect his own little ass. And it amazes me that
they
don't listen.
And they things under the rug too. They like to pretend that things never happened because, you know, now if you talked with him, he would probably say, "Oh, that never happened," or, "Well, you're misinterpreting how it happened. You know, it really didn't happen that way." Or, mm-hmm. you know, they love to forget things that they've done to you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then that had been like the pattern of me breaking up over and over when I, you know, didn't like the way I was being treated. Then, you know, "Oh, that's, you're just making that up in your head. I didn't just sleep with somebody." You know, it's, I am shocked really at the legal system and the court and the legal abuse, because when people that are going through a divorce with a narcissist, sociopath, psychopath, they are smeared and yet they charm and they end up making us look crazy when we're sitting there as calm as can be. I don't understand the law.
Well, they can charm your own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In mine, you know, he charmed my lawyer to where my lawyer didn't believe me. And she had believed me up until a point where he filed an affidavit saying that I was physically and verbally abusive to him. I had abandoned the family home. I only assume that means when I went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, for when I joined the Army Reserves. But you know, he put all these lies in this affidavit, and she called me up and was like, "I'm not judging or anything, but is any of this true?" And I was like, "No, none of this is true." "Well, people don't say stuff like this in sworn affidavits unless it's true." And I'm like, "How long have you been a lawyer? People lie all the time." But she had only been a lawyer for about a year. And that's something that I can tell people. If you're divorcing a narcissist, do not get a lawyer who is fresh out of law school, because they don't understand human nature. They have not seen the depths of depravity that these people will go to. And, you know, I didn't hire a lawyer fresh out of law school. I hired a lawyer who'd been practicing for 30 years, but then he took my case and gave it to her. To his associate. And so I ended up having to hire a new lawyer after about a year of her messing up the case and getting drawn into having to file more affidavits. They filed discovery, which I had no idea what discovery was until, you know, they filed discovery and I had to produce documents from 3 years with like every receipt from gas receipts, grocery receipts, clothes, anything that I had spent for 3 years because they were on a fishing expedition. Mm-hmm. But really what it is to bog you down and to wear you down legally to where you're just like, I don't care anymore. I just want out, you know, and you'll give up. And that's what they do. They keep filing one thing after another. You know, if they can't use the kids against you, they'll use the house. They'll use anything to wear you down. And I had a good friend that she told me, she's like, Raven, do not give up. He's trying to wear you down. Don't let him get away. Because there were times that I was just like, fine, just give him whatever he wants. I want to get it over with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's their goal, is to break us down and have us just put up the flag. And I personally was not going to sit there and let them lie on the stand, even though they did. My mother-in-law got up in front of the judge with an 18-page document stating that the house that she's lived in is hers, and it was never in my husband's name. It was, you know, the weird thing is she lived in New York, and this was drawn up by a lawyer in like Delaware, and she's got Delaware lawyers, she's got New York lawyers, and she's got Colorado lawyers. But this whole document, and then she stood there with her hand up on the Bible, swearing she was going to tell the truth, and this was the truth, and none of it was true. And about a week later, go ahead.
It's like everyone believes them.
Totally. I mean, she got up there like this crickety old lady. Oh, you know, meanwhile, that is so not like her. But she sat there just lying. And a week later, we found the paperwork in the city of the town in New York. And of course, the house was put in my husband's name. And then quickly, during the divorce, and then quickly thrown into a trust. But we produced those papers from the town, and they were back on the stand. And the judge said, what did you forget? You sold a like $5 million house and put it in his name? And they were like, well, you know, they really basically, she was like, well, yeah, but, and they did nothing. Like, did you not just perjure yourself? And am I perjuring myself? No. The worst thing I did on the stand was I was so pissed off at him once that I just sat there like this. I gave him the finger. And his lawyer was pounding on the table going, judge, judge. And the judge is like, okay, you have to stop that. I'm like, I had an itch. I felt guilty about it for years. But like, I was just being attacked. And they tried to go after me and say that he had moved me here to Colorado, and I lost a really good job leaving Connecticut. And they had this like work thing that they made me go through to see what I was worth and what I could do. And so they can prove that, you know, I'm not making my potential. And every single step of the way, they just fought. Were you deal?
Yeah, that was used on me, where he was saying that if she just worked more, she would not be dependent, because I was claiming I was the dependent spouse because I only made $20,000 a year. He made $85,000 a year. And so I was saying that I just needed a little bit of alimony to get through nursing school. Mm-hmm. And he was saying if she would just work more hours per week, she would not be the dependent spouse. I was like, I could work more hours per week, but I still would not be making enough to support me, support the children, and go to nursing school at the same time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they love to do that. They love to say that you're not pulling your weight.
Yeah. I think the advice to people that are going through a divorce is to really protect yourself from these lies, perhaps by documenting. Perhaps by being the one with all of the pieces. Yeah. You know, if you can't find them, you can get them at the bank. And then they look stupid for not producing the evidence that the judge is asking for. But be prepared and don't be emotional when they pull this shit on you in the court, because then you do look crazy, right?
Yeah, I think you have to be ready to defend yourself, you know, because I thought in my mind, he's never going to do this. He wouldn't accuse me of this, or he won't accuse me of that. And then, you know, he starts accusing me of everything. He starts accusing me of being unfaithful, and he's accusing me of abandoning the family home and all these things, you know, being abusive. And yeah, it was things that I was like, no, he's never going to do this. You know, we were married for 16 years. I'm the mother of his children. I was his wife, but they will. And you have to be ready for it. You have to document everything. Don't have a conversation with them that can't be recorded. You know, save all your emails, all your texts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really that our best protection is, you know, document it, get that to the lawyer. And then the lawyer's got some ammunition to fight whatever the lie is, right?
Oh, well, pickups and drop-offs. If you have kids, that's normally when drama starts. Because for some reason, it seems like they want to start something as soon as the kids get out of the car and they get into their car. And then, you know, that's when the narc comes over and wants to have a discussion. And so I started... Every time I dropped them off, I took my iPhone out and I, you know, clicked on where you can record a message. You can record record something. And I would put the phone in my pocket and I would get out of the car and it would be recording from the time I got out of the car and I'm talking to him till the time I got back in my car. And there was one time that he had a conversation with me that I didn't record because it caught me off guard, because I had picked up the kids at church. And I'm taking them to the car and he cornered me and he gets in my face and he's like, you need to tell your lawyer to stop this. You need to tell your lawyer to stop this. She's going to ruin this whole deal. She's going to ruin this whole deal. And I'm like, whoa, 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 back up. Yeah. And I didn't have my phone recording because I didn't expect it. I didn't think he was going to follow me through the parking lot and corner me.
Right.
But you know, you have to make sure that you've got something to record. You've got somebody with you. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times my mother goes with me for pickups and drop-offs, so there's a witness.
Wow. Oh, now, how are your kids doing after the divorce is final? Are they adjusting?
My kids are adjusting better now that they're not going back and forth all the time between houses. For some reason, I don't know why. Unlike some narcissists that will fight you and fight you for the kids, he fought me for the kids. And then changed his mind. Mm-hmm. After I got a second lawyer, I don't know what happened, if this other lawyer I got put the screws to his lawyer, but all of a sudden he decided to give me primary custody. So the kids stay with me 90% of the time now. And they're adjusting a lot better now that they're not around the narcissist, you know, 3 or 4 days a week. You know, so they have... There's chaos at his house, but here, you know, it's very calm. We have rules. We don't yell. We don't scream. This is their home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we live next to my parents. So, you know, they're next to their grandparents. They have an extended family. Mm-hmm. And I think that they've come a long way, that my daughter is entering her teenage years. So that's a whole other ball of wax, but they have really adjusted. Mm-hmm. Adjusted well, you know. Even though my son is autistic, he was on the AB honor roll this entire year and got a letter from our state senator congratulating him on his grades. Yes. So they're healing at about the same rate I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder. You know, people ask me all the time. Do they ask you, like, how long will it take till I'm better? People ask me that all the time.
How long it takes to heal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll let you know when I'm healed. it's been 3 years, and I'm doing really well. I don't freak out anymore as much when I get a phone call from him or an email like I used to. But the other day, I have a recording of him that I made right when the divorce was going on, and I pulled it out because I was listening to it, and I was listening to his voice, and just hearing his voice and the manipulation, it brought me back 3 years, and I was sitting there almost having a panic attack. Oh, wow. So even though you've come a long way, sometimes you take a step back.
Yeah.
It's a process, and mm-hmm. You don't know how long it's going to, it could take 3 years, it could take 1 year, it just depends.
Yeah. I think the important part for people to know is that how I heal and how you heal and how they heal is all different. And, for you, you've got to still deal with him and deal with the kids. For me, I'm completely gray rock from either of my narcissists. And so I don't have that. So for me, I feel like I've had a little accelerated, growth and closure, because I'll never talk to either one of them again. And that is like the best thing, is to just get away if you can and change your number and stop stalking.
Yeah, no contact.
No contact as much as you can. And again, with children, it's a different recovery.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem when you have kids is that you're always connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's that connection, and sometimes you're ordered by the court. I'm ordered by the court to have contact with him. When the kids are, they have a school program, I have to let him know. There's a PTA meeting Tuesday night, and the kids are singing. All these different things that I have to open up contact with him. That it would be a lot better if I didn't have to. If I didn't have to have that contact with him.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing to me? It's amazing that they make you do the, reminding him, like, he doesn't have any work to know what's going on at school.
Oh.
It's
like I'm his secretary.
Right. Happens all the time.
And he'll get mad if I haven't sent him something, immediately. I mean, he'll get mad, like, you are supposed to, according to line 5, section C, paragraph whatever of the parenting agreement, you are supposed to let me know when there are changes to the children's schedule. And I'm like, I just found out 2 hours ago. Calm down.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm supposed to be his secretary.
Yeah, exactly. And that's almost like another blow. Like, I know friends that are co-parenting as well, and it's like, why can't they be responsible and find out when things are? Why does it always have to be on the woman's shoulder? And I'm sure men have it too, but sad.
And he has access to this. Most parents have access to the school website. There's parent, they call them parent portals. And it's a website where you can go and see your kids' grades and all these things. He has access to all this. But he still wants me to scan it, put it in a PDF, and send it to him like I work for him.
Wow.
And that drives me insane, but I do it because I don't want him to accuse me of violating the parenting agreement.
Exactly. So you're living on the edge of fear, because if you don't do something, he's going to come back after you and accuse you of being a bad mother, not doing the parent agreement. It's so hard to win.
If the kids get like a bad grade, like my daughter is getting a C or a D in math, he's on the phone, immediately, like, why is she getting a D in math? What he's implying is that if she was living with me, she would be getting an A. She would be an A student, but it's because she's living with you. You're such a bad mother. You're so neglectful. I mean, this is how he talks. I used to do voices all the time. And so when I do videos, a lot of times I do voices, and I've had some people say, you're mocking him. And I'm like, no, I'm not mocking him. I'm doing his voice. This is how he talks.
Yeah.
But
I've done that too. And they usually sound a little bit like, my first husband sort of sounds like some Italian mafia man from the Bronx when I do it. So I don't do it anymore, but I used to like, wah, wah, wah. All right, dear, let's close this off. And it has been a pleasure. And I encourage everybody to go look at Raven's new life. She's got a great channel. And when I first started learning, I learned from you. You were in that bucket of people that I was learning and sucking up everything. So I appreciate you and your openness.
I was learning right along with you.
And that's the whole thing. We all are giving, sharing people, and we all take it to the next level and help someone else. So thank you.